here we are on Civic Outlaws. And yesterday, I was talking to you about my damn electric bill and International Flavor. And you can find all of these shows at internationalflavor.com if you want to listen to yesterday's or do anything like that. Or go back, hell, the whole 2 years we've been doing this. I started my Russian channel in February of 2024. And I did that for probably a year something plus in on YouTube, video only. And in August of 2024, when I went to Russia, went to Chechnya, went to the city of Grozny, that was really cool, went to Vladikavkaz, was in Georgia, the country of Georgia, and south central Russia, and it was awesome. It was freaking interesting. First time in Vladikavkaz. It's a very, very pretty, pretty town. And they have a mountain range there. Just beautiful. I went to the site of an avalanche where Sergei Bodrov, a famous Russian actor, was killed, and one of my favorite actors over there. And it was totally out of the blue. I didn't realize. I knew he was dead, but I didn't know he died there. And he died pretty young. He was like a young producer, had been in quite a few films, very famous films in the 90s. And I don't remember the exact time, but boy, they got quite a monuments laid out to him over there. And it's beautiful mountainous places. Anyway, I was just speaking about all of some of my Russian experiences, because I have a ton of them, and I was doing it in Russian, and I switched over and kind of, maybe they're too tight together, or I got to have a better swap into reality for me when I get there. So I'm going to get to what I was talking about. Those of you who listen to me every day my International Flavor Show. I'm here live from the Lake Ozark Real Estate of the Art Studio. If you'd like to phone in and talk about any of the topics that I bring up, this is only show number 2 of Civic Outlaws. And you can phone in 573-746-8020 if you've got a government story of bureaucracy. We target the career bureaucrat, the bureaucrat who's acting, I say, and this is my term that I call it, outside of their lane, okay? You have a lane. You're given power in the world of government. You're given power. We expect, as your subjects, we are the subjects of the bureaucrat, at least in their mind. You know, we are the subjects. We would respectfully request that when you're dominating us and telling us what to do, that you at least stay in your lane. You've been given power, but that power allegedly comes from the people. And you career bureaucrats out there, I think you have trouble realizing it. You think that the world revolves around you. Now, if you're a good bureaucrat, be a good little bureaucrat and follow the rules. Don't go create new ones. I feel like reading you a series of letters that I've been assisting with over the past week. But I won't do it yet. I may share them next week. But this is ridiculous. This is nonsensical. I've been helping a guy go through some, and it's the same old bureaucratic crapola. Our focus right now is alcohol and tobacco control. Our focus right now is they are outside of their lane. The courts may not agree with us. The courts often don't. However, it doesn't mean that I'm not right. I'm right. I've been wrong. I've been wronged while I was right, all the way to the Supreme Court of the United States, by the way, when I personally fought my own bureaucratic nightmare. And I'm right about that, too. OK, Okay. I may not have won, but I didn't win because of political reasoning and political bullshit, which is often the case when you go after a bureaucrat. So first, what I used to tell people when I was practicing law and they wanted me to sue the government for them, and I've done a lot of it, okay, is the first conversation you need to have is philosophical in nature, practical in nature. And a lot of lawyers will not sue the government. They won't touch it. You know why? Quietness. What's funny is you can say that word in Russia. You can in Russian, it's one word. And I was thinking of four or five words. I don't want to use them. But in Russian, it's tishina, quiet. Nobody answers. And at any rate, the reason behind that and the reason for counseling people who come in and say, you got to help me, I'm fighting the government in this area and I want to sue those assholes. And people claim that they're going to go sue the government. Well, the first conversation you need to have is about the king. Okay, the king couldn't be sued. Doesn't matter what form the king came in. Pharaoh. You sue the pharaoh? Absolutely not. You know, the prince of Qatar? You can't sue that guy. You're never going to win. In fact, it's not even allowed. There's no process for it. And England? King of England? Think you could sue him? Nope. Now, today, I don't speak about the law today. I'm talking about traditionally, where our legal system comes from. Ours is more Anglo-Saxon based. Ours is more hierarchy based. There have been civilizations, quite a few of them, that tried the representative process. You know, Rome, Egypt. You know, they tried to have these sort of governors, but it was really dictatorship of one divided to dictatorship of others. The same goes with the king and the nobles and the lords. You know, and then there's the dirty, nasty public. Well, in our current situation, we are the dirty, nasty public, and the bureaucrat is in the lordship class. And over the course of history of America, we've created these separate classes of people. People like to talk about the middle class. When they talk about the middle class, they're talking about the rabble that crawls around on the ground down below and, you know, is rolling their brats in the mud, you know, on a weekly basis. And that's the common American. That's the middle class. That's the guy who's kept in his place by bureaucracy, by power. And, they don't bug you, oh, rabble. Rabble rouser sometimes. But they don't bother the person who's just yucking it through life, you know, trying to make a few bucks, until you bump up against a system somehow. The worst thing you can do is bump up against the legal system. Because that system is not in your favor. Why? Because historically, you can't sue the king. You don't want to bump up. You want to go through life unnoticed. Okay, unnoticed, do your thing, push the limits, but never cross the line. You know, and there are a lot of people out here in the world, and when we know them, they're us, that won't kiss ass. We don't kiss ass. I'd rather not kiss ass, and so therefore, I try not to bump against the government because I don't want to kiss ass. And I remember, and those of you who know me well enough have heard this story before. When I was serving in the Army, which I did for a while, you know, I noticed this. And I noticed that there were certain positions where authority would accumulate, and those little fiefdoms, those little kingdoms of people, their kingdom was their kingdom. And it didn't matter who came to their kingdom, they had the same answer. And I remember, as a young sergeant in the Army, a day before some exercise going somewhere, some lieutenant or some captain told me to go down to supply and get whatever the items were. Go get some of these things. We need to take these with us. Go down to supply and get them. Here's the requisition form, you know, signed, filled out. Go down there and get this and tell them we need them, you know, in by the end of the day, because we got to pack out and get ready. Whenever you went somewhere, you would have pack out day the day before, and everybody would give a fake formation. A fake formation of for the next morning, so you could have a dry run of your formation in the morning. And so this guy wanted to have all of the equipment ready for the night so that we knew it was all ready when we left in the morning. That's a very good plan, actually. And some people say it doubles your cost because of what you're doing, but whatever. It's effective in the military, and you don't want to miss something, okay? And that's fine. That's his little kingdom, you know, the captain telling me what to do. Sergeant Trapp, make sure you have all this stuff in here and make sure we have this. Here's a requisition form. Go down to supply. But the captain doesn't run supply. Sergeant Trapp doesn't run supply. The battalion commander didn't run supply. Ultimately, he did, but the smart battalion commander would let the who? Supply sergeant run the supply. And I remember walking in there, and there's a sign on the door or on the desk, and he referred me to it, by the way, and he had this same answer for everyone, and the sign said as follows, and the sign said, "Long-haired freaky people need not apply." No, that's not what it said. It said, "Your." And it had it in quotes, and it was all capital letters, and it said, "Your failure to plan does not constitute my emergency." That was written on his sign on the desk. "Your failure to plan does not constitute my emergency." And I remember this extremely well, and because you only run into this once, right? This is the career bureaucrat. Okay, the career bureaucrat has his rules, has his own little guidelines that he follows. He is king in his little supply cabin. That's him. And that supply cabin is his domain. And he has a boss. And that boss is the supply guy above him at the battalion level, and then the supply guy above him at the brigade level, and the supply guy above him at the division level, who reports to the division commander. Okay? And so that the division commander is two-star general, probably, maybe one star. But as you get down the line, these guys have their bosses in line, all the way down to poor little lowly Sergeant Trapp down there at the bottom, working on behalf of his lowly captain, whoever that captain was. Go get this stuff, Trapp, and don't give me no for an answer. You know, just get it. Well, famous last words, I go down and ask the supply sergeant, "Where's my blah?" I said, "Well, we need this today. You know, is there some kind of emergency requisition form?" He goes, "Nope. And I will refer you and your captain to the sign on my desk. It says, 'Your failure to plan doesn't constitute my emergency. I'm working on my own stuff to be ready for tomorrow. And I have a million people who planned appropriately.'" There is no emergency that is worth my time to mess up all of that, because it'll impact my ability to do my job. And I get that, wholeheartedly get it. I understand that the bureaucrat also has his job. But there's a bit of a little snip in there, because part of them knows that they are untouchable, at least by rabble like me, or a captain rabble like my captain. Coming in to see a sergeant, he outranks the sergeant. Sergeant don't give a rip. He could care less about that captain, and he'd tell him so. "Sorry, I don't report to you. Read the sign." Read the sign. Have your sergeant read the sign. He should have told you about my sign. And what are you doing here? Isn't there anything we can do, sergeant? And that's where the sergeant gets to say, "Isn't there anything we can do?" And have a captain who failed to plan in his pocket. "Sir, you're killing me. You're killing me. This is not regular. This is not done." And he gets his opportunity to lecture a guy that outranks him. And this is important, you know, because this is bureaucracy at its core, okay? The bureaucracy at its core is the ability to tell somebody else, I don't work for you. I don't care about you. I'm doing what I think is right, and there you go, which is totally fine in the supply sergeant world. That's fine. That supply sergeant has a limited lane, I like to call it, of authority. Here's his authority lane. You need to work within that authority lane to get what you need to do your own job, because supply is an important part for a young sergeant to know about, so that when he becomes a first sergeant or he becomes a sergeant major, that he is now able to understand that you don't wait till the last minute to get whatever your things are. You order it in advance. It's the military. Everybody knows what they're doing in advance. You know, I mean, there's emergency stuff too, and there's a little bit rules applied differently during those, you know. But this is how an efficient system works. And I learned a lesson at that point. You need to kiss the ass of the supply sergeant all the time. Because if you were a dick to him when you walked in and he's got this sign on his board that says, your failure to plan doesn't make my emergency, that's kind of offensive. You know, hey, dickhead, I'm God here, not you, is basically what it says. I'm God, not you. And some supply sergeants act that way. I don't like that activity. I don't like them acting that way, because we're all trying to complete the same goal. But you learn at that level that, oh, yeah, this is the guy whose ass I need to kiss, so the next time the commander doesn't do his job and he sends me down here to get it done, this guy might help me out. So what do? You know, next Christmas when I'm buying my box of wine for people to have a bottle that I share with them, some Glühwein, which is very tasty, by the way. And I used to buy cases of it and hand it out to people, you know, but it was whoever was there. Well, guess what? That guy became a member of the Glühwein list. You know, you'd make sure to give the sergeant of the supply sergeant, he'd get a bottle of the best German Glühwein. You'd give him instructions on how to warm it up properly, the little bit of cinnamon to put in, and tell him about the joys of drinking Glühwein at the time of the holidays. And that's how the system works, okay? And not just in the military, but now we're going to focus upon what happens in when people don't stay in their lanes. Civic Outlaws exists because people don't stay in their lane. Okay? And I've written an article. I wrote several articles. Yesterday I was telling you about how a form becomes the law. This is how it goes. And I think, and I might share that written version with you, and I might not. But I have a, where is it? Let me get my, it's under my book, Kamenny Most, which I was talking about on my Russian program. What? I also need my eyeglasses because I'm a blind fool when you get to the end of the day. And I can't see on top of that. So that's, you know, he can't see out of one eye and he's blind in the other, is what they always used to say. And that reflects me. So I'm going to grab my tablet. And I have my trusty little tablet, and on it is an article that I have written. Last week, I shared with you an article. This is article number 2, and it's been published, and I'm going to share this in its entirety when I get there. But I have to get to the link first. And I published this, if you wish to copy it, share it, paste it. It is out on my LinkedIn page. And you can go out there. I am LinkedIn. You put a /, and I think it's EN that you got to put to show that you're in English yet. And then you can type SamTrap1. So actually, that's not true. The link is LinkedIn.com/IN/SamTrap1. And if you go out there, you will be able to find a post that I put up yesterday, which has the latest article that I published. And now, I haven't touched my I haven't touched my LinkedIn page in a long time. And I fixed it up, cleaned it up last week and got it correct because I wanted it to be correct. And I want to publish my articles out on that network. And so that is what I have done. And I created a Civic Outlaws company page out there. And, you know, I had, you know, 2,500 or so followers, you know, people that follow me around or do what I say. And, or not do what I say, but communicate through LinkedIn. And so I didn't want to lose that. But I like I said, I haven't used it all that often. And if you go to the company page, Civic Outlaws, where the home of Civic Outlaws is, there should be a media link. I'm a little confused on how to get there myself. So I think I'm just going to go to my, but it is out there. It is easier on a computer than it is on Sam's tablet. So what we're going to do is have that article, which basically goes like this. Last week when we talked about a lot about the legal concepts surrounding the Chevron doctrine and the overturning of that doctrine by Supreme Court in the case called Loper Bright versus Raimondo. And that's a Supreme Court case from 2024, June-ish, in there. They haven't assigned it a tracking number yet because the books haven't been published yet, but they will be out there soon, you know, on what they are. Usually it takes a year, year and a half for those things to be printed and assigned properly. And so they say whatever the prefix is 273 U.S., meaning U.S. Supreme Court, and then underneath it, it gives you the... So I can't give you the right link to that, but if you went out and searched online, you could look for Loper Bright versus Raimondo, R-A-I-M-O-N-D-O, and that is the overturning of what they call the Chevron Doctrine. If you want to hear the story about that and how that... is important, you can go out to internationalflavor.com and listen to the February 14th, Valentine's Day, release of Civic Outlaws. You can do that. And the article that I shared and the reason it's important and why Loper Bright was such an important case and what the Missouri legislature did afterward. They... can't believe I'm saying it, did the right thing. And they modified another very important, very, very important, at least as far as bureaucracy and Civic Outlaws is concerned. This is astronomical importance. They overturned 536. Amended 536.140, especially subparagraph 3. And that subparagraph says that deference, meaning deferring to a bureaucrat, is dead. That courts interpret the laws keeping people specifically in their lane. You can only have the power, bureaucrat, supply sergeant. You can only have the power that is given to you. My supply sergeant couldn't jump out of his supply box there, even though he outranked me, and come out and say, Sergeant Trapp, you need to take that hill. Go take that hill. Well, operationally, he's not my boss. Screw you. You're not my boss. Stay in your lane. Your power is in that room right over there. And that's the only place your power is. Why? Because that's all the power that was given you from above. The bureaucrat doesn't understand this. The bureaucrat never understands this. The bureaucrat says, I'm in charge. I'm in power. I can help my buddy Joe Bob get something done, and I can use my power to beat up on people I don't like, to interfere with their lives. That's bureaucracy. And when I talk about bureaucrat, I'm not talking about the career state employee who just has a job and is doing what he's told. I'm talking about the person who seizes power not in their lane to make a name for themselves, to expand their authority, to make themselves more important. You ever had a girlfriend or a friend who wanted to, or boyfriend, I suppose the case could be too, that wanted to make themselves more useful to you, and so they would interfere in stuff that you were doing because they needed to be involved in every little angle of your life? It's kind of pressing. That's not freedom. I mean, that's expanding their role. You're supposed to have your own happiness, your own freedom, and share that happiness and understand that the other person in your relationship is sharing their happiness with you and has their own freedom on top of that. The life you share together, you could say you have a joint life in a lot of respects, and you should, but that doesn't mean you shouldn't have, and you don't have separate desires as well. You know, that's foolish to think that every tiny little thing, that you never have a disagreement. You know, it's, you don't have something in life that your significant other does not understand, doesn't want to be there, okay? We all need to understand what that lane is and what we show and where we are, especially the career bureaucrat. So, in keeping with that, I got a series of articles that are coming out. I've already got three or four, five in draft form. Two are now completed and shared. The first one was about Loper Light, Loper Bright, and 536.140. This one is more about deference being dead and why. And I want to share this article with you. If you don't have the ability to download anything at all, or you want to just send me a complaint about a bureaucrat, you want to talk about a bureaucrat who isn't staying in his lane, and you want us at Civic Outlaws to look around for it and tell you, give you some pathways, or maybe we take that pathway on our own as our own activity, and start sending out sunshine requests from Civic Outlaws, which we sent out several this past week, to various agencies and people. And if you would, if you ever are interested, you can go to civicoutlaws.com and look at our current activities and check out what our current activities are. And that will give you some of the things that we have been working on. And I'm going to see where that is even now so I can identify the right page of where. What? Damn it. I guess I can't type, friends and neighbors. I'm just a non-typer. What the hell is this? I've typed in a web address. Take me to it, you wanker. Instead, it's asking me questions. I don't have questions. I have a website I want to get to, and it's not allowing me. Maybe I've been blocked. Who's blocking me, and why? This I must know. No, here we are. Okay, there's several titles to the page. It says investigations, things we're looking into right now. Missouri ATC is top dog right now. Because they are not in their lane. They are going outside of their lane repeatedly and intentionally and blatantly outside of their lane. And we've done a bunch of Sunshine Law requests on these guys. And so our one investigation is Missouri ATC. The next one is Flock Cameras. If you don't know Ike Skelton's story, you should find out about it. He got railroaded, and it's nonsense what he's gone through. And if you support Flock Cameras, you're just wrong. Those are search and seizures every single time you drive past one. Does it not bother you that today somebody could call in and say, you know, I'd like to know where Sam's car was, and here's the details on the car, Where has it been the past month? And they can send a letter, unsolicited, on anything, as long as they're a police department or something. You shouldn't be able to do this without a warrant, by the way. But this is what they do. And by the way, a private individual is holding this information and selling it to whomever he likes. Car repo companies, what if I hadn't paid the car bill? And I wanted to still drive in my car, and I was just having a little bit of trouble, and I was still trying to work it out, but they didn't want to work it out. And then they find it on you know, and they track you. What if you don't drive your own car and somebody else does? You know, you've loaned it to someone else for a long time. I mean, that's crap, too. And there's a case in going on in Richmond, Virginia now that I meant to have an update for today, and I don't, and but I need to get it, but I've been a busy little beaver the last week with various shows and projects going on. But these cameras, tell you what, if somebody wants to know where you've been, that's an illegal search in many respects, that they get to go out and go, wait a minute. You know, and I assume that at some point the Supreme Court will come out and say, nah, public road, anywhere you go, you know, they can search that car. And I hope they narrow it down to say with a warrant. There's got to be some agreed upon deal, but I don't think it should be a private company and nationwide. What a crock of shit that is. Why would you want a nationwide tracking system? And I realize that we've all got phones in there and Big Brother's tracking us. Anywho, but this blatant filming of your car, what if you're going to your girlfriend's house and you're not telling your wife? Why in the world do they get to know that? Would my wife in the divorce be able to subpoena the records of Flock cameras to find out if on the night of, I don't know, June the 5th, I went to the hooker's house or found a girl in a bar and drag her home, find out where my car was, and then I got to come up with a reason for that? I think there's far too many negatives and not quite enough positives for this system the way it is. Plus, I don't believe in the power structure not using it for their own purposes. As I've told you before, there are many, many stories about police professionals using those systems to track people they don't like. Suppose the police officer's wife is sleeping around while he's on duty and he feels he should check. What stops him from getting on there and getting all the data for where her car's been at any given time? There's too many stories about that where the police have done that and they verify it. And those are the examples they give. Is that right? That is a bureaucrat right there. The guy who goes out and spies on his wife using a government system, that's a bureaucrat, okay? And this is what we fight. The system is the system. There's some kind of balancing act that you have to do to defend the rights of the police, the professional nature of a police department while beating up on the horrible police officer. The professional department of the alcohol and tobacco control with beating up on the professional bureaucrat who's doing nothing but seizing power outside of their lane and using it as a club to beat a license holder. Okay? And which brings us to article number 2 in Sam's world. Okay. I brought my readers in here because there's always somebody's spares in here, and I don't know whose they are, and I don't want to steal them because they'll go in my pocket and they'll be gone and they're not mine. And it wouldn't be intentional. It just would be. Okay, sorry for bumping the microphone there and hurting your ears. So I'm going to read to you, it's a rather short article, 4 pages, nothing too dramatic, but it comes basically from the, last week I talked to you about why Civic Outlaws is here, why it was developed in the first place, what we are after. And it isn't just one activity. You all know my history. I've told you about it. And I've gone through it, and it's just wrong what they have done to me. It's freaking wrong. And I could lecture on it. I plan to lecture on it. I want to, I'm thinking about something pretty big. I'm thinking about having a seminar on overreach and on the bullshit of the Missouri bar. I'm thinking about that. But I think it should be less brutal and less personal and geared toward the general overreach of a bureaucrat. This is what bureaucrats do. If they have a certain amount of power, they think it's great. Well, if I have this amount, perhaps I could add on some more. That's what bureaucrats do. It is in their nature to tell you what you must do. Why? Because they are important and you are not. You're the common rabble down on the bottom that must do as you're told, or bring a bottle of Gluvine this year, and maybe next year you won't have to go through any problems and you might have an easier process. You've pissed us all off, and therefore you're anti-bureaucrat, and we know it, and so therefore you will be eternally screwed because you are anti-bureaucrat. I'm okay with that. Actually, I'm not, but that's our system, friends and neighbors. If they choose to come after you, trust me, they're coming. And they pick and choose who they go after, and there are obvious violators that get to go free. Why? Gluvine. That's why. And they've done the right thing to the right people, so they look the other way. If you think it doesn't exist, you better think again, because it does, which is why these fights are so important. You need to keep these people in their lanes, or at least, even if the judge doesn't support your position, you need to let them know that you're aware of it and that you disagree with it. And, you know, I must say that over the past few years, it is now open knowledge that Donald Trump got screwed by a system used to target him. It's now okay to talk about those things, to try to make people pay for the fact that they use the government like a club to beat up on the rabble below. It's okay to talk about that. And the likelihood of it being believed today is a hell of a lot greater than it was even a short 4 or 5 years ago. You know, I'm not a person that runs, you know, when I used to sue police officers, which I did fairly regularly in federal court for overreach, for doing things that were outside of their authority to do, I would always get the, you don't like cops, you hate cops. No, I hate corrupt cops. I hate cops who go outside of their lane. And hate isn't the right word. I want to take them out of that position. Not take them out. I want to take them out of that position because they don't understand the level of professionalism that must be demanded of every bureaucrat who is wielding power given to them by the rabble. Okay? We have helped create, and we're supposed to support that system. I can support the supply sergeant system that I outlined for you. I get that. I understand why. I can support a licensing regime that is not discretionary, but absolute. Give me rules that apply to everyone. I can support a NATO that doesn't have one set of rules for one country and another set of rules for another. I can support international law that applies equally to everyone. And anyone who knows me knows I'm all about systems. I am not about individual grudges and disputes, although they certainly exist. Because without the bureaucrat, who is, that's a bad word in my vocabulary, it's almost as bad as calling someone an asshole, because they are a bureaucrat, and a bureaucrat will always be a bureaucrat. They're not a government employee that's an honest and, upstanding and is staying in his lane and treating people equally, they are someone who is in charge and wants you to know it. And how do they make sure you know it? They screw with you. I would love to share the five letters back and forth over the last week over something, but I won't do it yet. I won't do it. It's nonsensical even now. And when you, and the funny part is when you up the tension, what do? They have no capacity for anything other than one upsmanship. That's it. You trip me in school, I'll make sure you get thrown against a locker. You throw me against a locker the next day, I'll make sure someone pushes you down the stairs. Next day, I push you down the stairs. Next day, I bring a knife. I bring a knife. You bring a gun. You bring a gun. I bring a cannon. I bring a cannon. You bring a nuclear bomb. That's how a bureaucrat thinks. One upsmanship all the time. They will not talk to you on a reasonable basis. They must let you know who is in charge. And the communications that I've received over the last week that I've been working with are exactly that. It's always one-upsmanship. Always. And you know these type of people. Why is it that this type of person is prevalent? Why? They just love the narcissistic, I'm in charge, you're not. I'm in charge, you're not. And that's the refrain in the back of their head. Who the hell is this guy? I'm in charge. Who's he to do that? Doesn't he see my sign? Didn't he see my sign that, you can't sue the king? I'm the king in, my little kingdom. This is my kingdom. And by God, why isn't he kissing my ass? Last year, he brought me a bottle of Glühwein. This year, I got nothing. And boy, I'm going to make him pay for that. Where's my Glühwein? Because once you give him Glühwein, you got to bring it every year. Or he's going to remember that you didn't bring it the second year. And you won't get the favor treatment that you got the last time. You won't get the, hey, let me help you get your license through this scenario. Because licensing is one of those areas where this is prevalent. You want to screw with somebody? Hold their application up for several weeks. Make them come up with documents that don't exist. Make them, and I've told you about the Sam Phillips of the world, the Missouri bar guy. I've told you about that many times in the past. And this is who I'm talking about. The person who wears his power on his sleeve, and if he chooses to wield it against you, there ain't a damn thing you can do with it but fight back as best you can and prove that he's out of his lane. And thus, we get to Article number two. Article number two is about deference. Okay. Now, last week we covered with article number one the Loper Bright and the Missouri 536.140 changes that are welcome in my world and should be welcome in yours. And what it says is the bureaucrat is not the guy who decides what the lane is. No, that is determined by the legislative branch, by writing a statute, by creating a law. And then it is signed by the governor, the boss of the bureaucrat, right, ultimately. And he acknowledges that this is the lane of power that's been given to me to pass along to my supply sergeant or bureaucrat down below. This is it. So this is the lane they've been given. If there's a dispute, up until Loper Bright and up until 536.140, the interpretation tie went to the bureaucrat, and that helped the bureaucrat become the bureaucrat they are today. But especially in Missouri under 536.140, deference is dead. It's dead. It's dead, friends and neighbors. Slam on that Bible. Thump it. because deference is dead. Okay. And, but I wrote an article to this effect. Last week's article has been well received. I've got a lot of good commentary on it, both personally and in commentary. I like it. People have listened to it. I shared it with you during the last Civic Outlaws last week. If you don't have time to read it, but you want to hear about it, then please download it at civicoutlaws.com, or you can send me an email at samuelt@civicoutlaws.com, and I will happily send you a copy, okay? You can also go out to my LinkedIn page and find it. And that, I anticipate, you know, will be good for all of us. I want you to do it. So I'm going to share this article. The article is called "Deference is Dead, But Moral Character Still Wants Your Liquor License." Okay. The 73 in a 30 test, the rape hypothetical, and ATC's endless runway. On December 3rd, 2025, Circuit Court of Cole County, which is the 19th Judicial Circuit, Judge Brian Stumpy held a civil motion hearing in the matter of Jack's Inc. versus the Missouri Division of Alcohol and Tobacco Control, case number listed. Jack's was represented by Travis Noble from St. Louis. The state argued through Assistant Attorney General Clayton Weems. If you want to understand why Civic Outlaws exists, that hearing is a clean show your work moment. The court forced the state to explain the limits of its theory. The state couldn't. Instead, it tried to stretch good moral character into a catch-all power to punish alleged criminal behavior through licensing without ordinary criminal process guardrails. The move is simple. Take a recently discovered criminal statute outside your own agency's zone of enforcement, here, Chapter 573's sexually oriented business provision, treat it as a licensing moral character club under your own enforcement lane, which here is Chapter 311 alcohol control, and use that club to deny, restrict, or punish any liquor license holder without criminal conviction. The ATC has now expanded its concept to include any license holder, as well as any employee and any patron of that license holder's establishment. And that, my friends, is criminal enforcement through the back door. And the court's questions exposed the weakness in the bureaucratic theory they've seized. The ATC recognizes no limiting principle. It can reach all the way from a 70 and a 30 speeding example all the way to a rape in the back room example and still just label it as a determination of a licensee's moral character. The state admits selective activation of this. We didn't know this law existed. Mr. Weems told the court that the division was unaware of a 573 statute that prohibited the sale of alcohol at gentlemen's clubs until he discovered it in 2022. My immediate question, could that be because the ATC has no authority to act under 573 anyway? I wonder. But according to Mr. Weems' argument, this enforcement hammer sat quietly for years and then suddenly became ATC's primary method to enforce ATC's personal morality code and vague standards of good moral character. This doesn't result in stability and in an even application of a licensing standard. It results in selective enforcement. This matters because when enforcement is selective, the public can't tell what the rule really is. They can only guess who the rule will be used against and try to defend themselves by flying under the radar as much as possible and not coming into contact with the government. You never want to hear the words, "I'm with the government. I'm here to help." Moral character is an elastic weapon. The state's core power resides in chapter 311.060, which does include moral character. So, Mr. Weems argued that the statutorily undefined, the legislature didn't define good moral character, but he says that is respect for the law. So, ATC can look at the law, any law, to decide if a licensee is morally fit. But once respect for the law, and not good moral character, is the standard, the real question becomes which law? What level of violation? Who decides? Does it require conviction? Or just the agent say you're doing something wrong? After all, a statement that can mean anything any agent wants it to at any time can be used as a club against anyone the agent decides to target. So Judge Stumpy asked an honest question. If violating the law shows a lack of respect for the law and thus equates to bad character, which law violation acts as the trigger? He put it more plainly. He said, so I'm going 73 and a 30. Do I lack respect for the law? Where does that lie? That question itself is devastating because it forces the state to choose. Either every violation counts, that's absurd and unworkable, like a 73 and a 70, or only some violations count. Each of those are subjective or selective. So Weems' answer proves that point. He acknowledged that speeding can be a misdemeanor and a breaking of the law, and lack of respect for the law said that an ATC agent might try to act upon it, but he admitted that such an example would be preposterous. But he did try to snap the court back to the reality and the facts, because here the statute is related to alcohol at sexually oriented businesses. He said, but preposterous is not a legal boundary. It's an agent's vibe. And we're focusing on this statute today is not a limiting principle at all. It's a discretionary choice. Maybe tomorrow the agent will focus on those traffic violations. Maybe that's the focus then. So the court pressed him further. ATC is using Chapter 573 in this case, but how far does respect for the law theory go? Does it include felonies only? Misdemeanors? Municipal violations? Where is the line? Mr. Weems concluded that there is no case law that answers that question clearly. That is precisely where courts become skeptical, not deferential. Weems pointed to 536.140, didn't say whether it was the old version or the new, their review concepts, which include unreasonable, arbitrary, or capricious, as safeguards to make sure that people didn't get targeted, and he suggested that denying a license over a minor speeding infraction would be unreasonable, so the system has that guardrail. Gee, that's comforting. It's also insufficient. We promise to be reasonable is not a substitute for defined legal standards, especially when the agency is both the referee and the player until the case reaches a judge. The bigger point is this. Missouri's 2025 change to Section 536.140, which Weems referenced, signals that the era of bureaucrats' reliance upon business as usual is over. That revised statute instructs court and administrating hearing officers to interpret statutes, rules, and regulations de novo, as if new, and not defer to the agency's dream interpretation of their own. If any doubt remains, the court has to resolve it by limiting agency power and maximizing individual liberty. That does not mean trust ATC to be reasonable. It means that courts decide meanings and limits. Then came the line that should forever live in the record. Weems said, in substance, if agents walk into an establishment and someone is being raped in the back room, that would obviously be very negative, especially if the business practices facilitated it. I didn't say that for shock value. It's about the state avoiding a legal boundary by reaching the most extreme scenario imaginable. Rhetorically, the move is this. If you limit us, you're going to protect monsters. You know, if you don't let us have discretion to go after who we want, you know, you're going to create some monsters. You're going to create rape in the back room. That's not the law. That's leverage. But of course, rape is a crime. And that's the point. It should be prosecuted. If an ATC agent went into any club, any bar, and witnessed a rape, his only lawful response would be to call law enforcement immediately. He couldn't handle it by noting its moral character of the guy who owns the bar and subject to his licensing. By the way, the ATC would not be able to arrest the violator committing the rape. They're not authorized. They're not policemen. Even though agents are post-certified as law enforcement, they have no authority to arrest except, and this is only arguable, in their own statute lane of RSMO, Revised Statute of Missouri, Section 311 and 407. So the judge's 73 and a 70 question tested the bottom end of that scale, and Weems tested the top end of that scale with the rape hypothetical. The state's answer showed the same defect at both ends, though. No principled legal boundary exists. It's just an invitation for discretionary power and bureaucratic overreach. But we have something further here at Civic Outlaws. The end run argument. Criminal accusations without criminal process. Plaintiff's counsel argued that ATC, that's Travis Noble, is doing an end run around criminal due process. So you observe a violation of a criminal statute. Therefore, we deny your liquor license. It does not give the licensee a meaningful chance to litigate an allegedly criminal violation in a criminal court. Counsel also noted that the administrative hearing commission can't decide constitutional issues. By the way, it can't process criminal issues either. So due process questions gets kicked down the road while the business takes the hit now. And what that means is that basically, let's use Weems' example. You walk in and you see some guy raping some girl in a building. You can't arrest him, but you go to the bar owner and say, man, you got a rape going on back there. I'm taking your liquor license. And then you get involved in a hearing about the rape. The issue's the same. We're not saying, I'm taking his example. I'm not saying it's, but the issue for the license holder is exactly the same. He's not guilty of a rape. He's guilty maybe of allowing a rape. At least in the speeding example, he may have been the one that was speeding, but he's been convicted of it. Here, all that happened is an officer allegedly saw a violation of a law that he can't prosecute, but suddenly he's become accuser, police officer, investigator, prosecutor, says you're breaking the law, and judge and jury. All of those things. He's done. It's over. He walks in, sees a crime's committed. Your license is gone. The end. And you didn't even commit the crime. Wasn't you committing the rape, but you allowed the rape to happen. Even if you didn't see it, you didn't stop it. And so the agent gets to come in and claim you've broken the law. Therefore, or somebody broke the law in your establishment. No proof, no nothing, but I saw it, and therefore you have bad moral character because you committed a crime or you allowed a crime to be committed. So the state's response was that these issues can be preserved administratively, and you can handle them on judicial review. And that's true in theory, but you can fight it later is a weapon when delay is the game and the agency's ally is the process of punishment. Right? I want to talk about locational good character for a minute, which I did in the article too. Here's the problem that jumps off the defender December 3 hearing transcript. ATC's good moral character / respect for the law theory is being used as a denial hammer, but the same bad character vanishes the moment the applicant agrees to redraw a premises boundaries. That makes character not about the agent's moral or the applicant's moral fitness, and more about whether ATC likes the floor plan that week. The ATC frames good moral character as 311.060 as respect for the law, then uses that concept to bridge the import of allegations from a criminal chapter into 311 licensing decision. That's already pretty elastic. But the locational twist is what exposes the weakness even further. The state simultaneously argues, you can get rid of your bad character. Your license renewal can be denied because your conduct shows a respect for the law. But you can cure that defect by carving up the premises or changing the premises so that a crime isn't being committed there and alcohol is sold outside. And that changes your character. So them instructing you to do something will change your character locationally. Without any criminal adjudication, with no finding that the business is subject to any of the provisions of 573. In other words, the alleged moral defect is only a zoning problem. But doesn't an individual's bad character follow him outside the bar? If you have bad character inside the bar, wouldn't it be bad character outside the bar? Curious. You can see plaintiff's counsel spell out the contradictions in plain English. The reason we took it the license from inside was because of bad moral character. But you can have a license outside. There, you don't have bad character. The court record then shows the business owner testified to the practical reality. They went from you're denied because you have bad moral character to you're approved because you can serve alcohol outside. If good moral character was a genuine fitness for licensure standard, it would attach to the applicant, or at least to the applicant's management practices, not the square footage on the license. A person who is supposedly unfit to hold a liquor license doesn't suddenly become fit because the bar stool is moved 30 feet and a wall is drawn in between. So the locational cure suggests what this really is. Leverage. It isn't about character that's being assessed. It's a compliance ultimatum. Sign the affidavit. Accept the redefined premises, and your moral character problem magically disappears, and you can go back to making money. Crazy. Okay, let's talk about lewdness as a second front, and there are plenty of fronts, by the way, but this is another front. And then we'll wrap it up. We're almost there. The hearing also highlighted how undefined terms become a license for agency invention. Plaintiff's counsel described ATC's lewdness framing and the kind of evidence being used, including a jar with a crude drawing in the phrase tips for tits written upon it, which ATC allegedly cited as lewd. So these dots on a paper drawn with a marker are lewd and reason to remove your license. Lewd isn't a showing of even a real nipple. You can put a dot on a piece of paper that resembles a nipple, and suddenly that's lewd. It's a pencil drawing that your 8-year-old might do. My 8-year-old, maybe not yours. But whatever anyone thinks of that phrase, you know, this crude drawing, and the legal point is straightforward. When a statute doesn't define what lewdness is, the agency creates one in a vacuum with whatever we say it means. You don't have law, you have our discretion. And discretion without a limiting principle is how selective enforcement is born. Federal Chevron deference being dead doesn't automatically fix Missouri. So Missouri went further effective August 28th of 2025. As I told you, 536.140 now commands that no deference and no de novo interpretation in actions that involve state agencies. That matters because it strips the agency of his favorite escape route. Our interpretation deserves respect. Nope, not anymore. If the ATC claims it can import criminal law terms into Chapter 311 as moral character tests, the court must decide that question independently, according to 536.140. If ATC claims it can define lewdness without any legislative clarity, because they actually weren't given the ability to define lewdness, but they did anyway, it's not in the statute, the court must decide it independently, if that's what they intended. And if any doubt remains, Missouri's new instruction is to resolve any doubt by limiting agency power of interpretation and maximizing an individual's liberty. That's an explicit instruction by the legislature to stop letting agencies bootstrap power out of vague phrases. That statute requires them to stay in their lane. I want to give you a quick note on Loper Bright. It's federal, but the concept is universal. And Missouri has now made it our law by 536-140. The message is that courts must exercise independent judgment on questions of law. Agencies don't win the tie just because they are agencies. Missouri's 536.140 adds a very Missouri-flavored kicker. When, after using normal tools of interpretation, any doubt remains, the decision maker should pick the reasonable reading that constrains the agency and protects an individual's liberty. That isn't a small tweak, friends and neighbors. It's a directional command aimed straight at the kind of moral character equals whatever we say it does, reasoning that fuels modern administrative overreach. And don't let anyone distract you with, but the rule was properly promulgated, or but the agency has expertise. Notice and comment procedures answer only whether the paperwork was done right. It does not answer whether the legislature granted power in the first place, whether they put it in the lane of ATC. Expertise might help explain facts. It does not create authority out of thin air. If the statute doesn't give ATC the lane, ATC doesn't get to paint one on the highway and call it a rule. Strip away the emotion and you're left with a clean legal issue. Can ATC treat alleged criminal category conduct as a licensing disqualifier without a conviction based on its own interpretation under a vague moral character standard, especially where the legislature did not clearly authorize ATC to act as a shadow enforcer of Chapter 573's criminal law through Chapter 311 licensing? And even more importantly, why enforce it against every license holder and their employees and patrons now? That is the fight. It's not about whether people approve of a particular business model. It's about whether an agency can create enforcement by proxy through licensing and then ask a court to defer. I say, not anymore. Judge Stumpy's 73 and a 70 question was not a joke. It was a warning flare. If respect for the law means whatever ATC says it means, everyone is guilty, but only some specially selected people get punished. Civic Outlaws exist to stay on top of such issues. Please check us out at civicoutlaws.com. That's the end of my article. You can download it, share it, read it. This program, you can download it, share it. We're creating our Civic Outlaws podcast platform, but I don't have the concrete link yet. So, and I'm always going to upload them onto International Flavor anyway, because I hope you join in and listen to me at International Flavor every morning from 7:39 on Damn Radio, and on Fridays, Civic Outlaws from 7:30 to 8:45-ish, or whenever I decide to stop. And this Friday, today, this morning, before this show, as I stated, I started my Russian-speaking radio program an hour and a half prior to the 7:30. So at 6 a.m., I started my Russian-speaking. If you speak Russian and you'd like to know about that, join me for my Russian-speaking version of International Flavor Fridays at 6 a.m., to 7:30 a.m., and then I will go right into Civic Outlaws show after that. Happy Friday to everyone. I'm very glad you're here. You can always email me at Samuel T at civicoutlaws.com. If you got something to report, go to civicoutlaws.com and bring it on. We'd love to help or at least know about your tales of woe. And trust me, there are plenty of them when bureaucrats are about. And you can't swing a dead cat without hitting a bureaucrat. So they're there. Don't be afraid to report. We'll allow you to do it anonymously, too, if you want. And have a nice day. Very glad you showed up. Let's see if I can do what I'm supposed to do here appropriately and get you back to the music. We have another program coming up in about 20. Meanwhile, I shall cut out and have some music for you. Have a very nice day.